So, Maisie, thank you for joining me today. It's really great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you're a St. Joe native.
Yeah.
Right? And you grew up with roots in the farming community, mm-hmm. and went to St. Joe Christian,
yeah.
which is a huge legacy for our town and for the school. Mm-hmm. But I would love to just hear, and the people watching, just a synopsis of your journey, not mm-hmm. only as a Christian, but how mm-hmm. that really intersected with where you find yourself today, which is mm-hmm. representing the second district in the Missouri State Legislature. Mm-hmm. And how has God led you into that? And what's the journey been like?
The journey's been quite hectic. I went to Sturtsville. I grew up in Sturtsville, then went to St. Joe Christian, of course, Missouri Western. But really, I think, you know, my life during that whole time, I was dyslexic and never knew it till I had graduated college. My parents didn't even tell me that they thought maybe I had it until I called them one day and I was just kind of frustrated. But I just, you know, I was actually really glad they didn't tell me because I was able to learn how to overcome those obstacles during all of that. And going to Christian school was really difficult because, of course, learning was. But through it all, like learning about the Bible and like grace, those were like kind of the tools in my toolbox that I was going to need as I, you know, journeyed through college and then went away and went to DC. And during that time, I can really pinpoint like a few things, like just learning about the Bible and how true it is and learning to always be on guard, but also know what you know. That was really important. I think that's something that St. Joe Christian really taught us. Because they talk about being able to defend the Bible, but also be able like to tell people about it too. And little did I know, like all of those instances where I was learning to jump over hurdles and learning how to accomplish hard things was really just kind of getting me ready to run for the legislature, which I really didn't want to do. It's really easy to be behind the person.
Yeah.
Like I kind of think about like the disciples when they were around Jesus. Like, I mean, he was so cool and they were just like pumping him up and then he was gone. And then they were like, what now? Yeah. They're like, wait a minute. Now this is on us.
Yeah.
And so I can only imagine like what they were thinking during that time. And you know, when I was in DC and I was thinking that I probably wasn't going to be there forever. It's not a forever place. And I think a lot of people, just in life get in these places and they think they have to be there forever, but it was really only a seasonal time.
Yeah.
And I was figuring out how I wanted to go back home. I had been asked to run, but I was like, that's just not really for me. I really love being a worker. Like being out in the spotlight or even just being the person. It's not my favorite place. Like I really love just kind of doing my own thing.
Yeah. And what were you doing?
You were
working in DC.
Yeah.
You were working with campaigns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How were those inroads?
This was all a God thing, but I did an internship with my Senator Roy Blunt, which I really didn't agree with, but I will like note his staff was so like good to me. And I met this lady, we had the same last name, not related. She was his comms director and her and I just became good friends. And she was the reason I actually got to work on the presidential for Trump in 2020 because she had given me a call. I was like, hey, the Trump campaign's trying to find communications people. She's like, I know you're not a comms major. You're a business major. But she's like, because I was cleaning houses at that point in St. Joe.
Yeah.
She's like, anyone that cleans houses and like, you know, loves Trump, I think, you know, it'll be fine. And I was like, okay, like I'll do it. And it was the craziest thing in my life because Trump was the reason I loved politics and I studied politics, not in school, but just in my own personal time. And then being able to go and like do like, you know, I was like a peasant, like my 1% trying to help him get reelected. I just felt like it was the greatest honor. And I was only there for like 2 months. And then I get a call. I didn't take it. And it was like, hey, we found your resume. 'Cause they had a binder of our resumes and they're like, do you want to come interview to be the executive assistant to this guy named John McEntee? Didn't know who he was. He has no social media. Like, and now you can find him. He has like 2 million followers, state rights stuff. Yeah. But at that point, had no idea who he was. He was Trump's body man. And I was like, I called my mom. I was like, you'll never believe it. I was like, the White House called me. They want me to interview to be this guy's assistant. And I was like, this is not like going to happen for me. Because backstory, when I was at the campaign, we were doing interviews, the guy told me I literally was not going to get a job in the second administration because I didn't know anyone. And I was like, because he kept asking who my parents were, who I knew. And I'm like, dude, I'm just like grateful to even be here.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I didn't even, you know, I don't know anyone. My parents don't know anyone. Like, you know, everything will just work out. Yeah. And then 2 weeks after even that interview, I get the call. And I'm interviewing, and then my boss, John, was like, do you want this job? I'm like, I want this job, you know, and it was just, it was crazy. And he's like, he took a call from some ambassador, and he's like, you're going to be taking these calls now. And I'm like, are you serious right now? Like, I'm going to.
Like, just right in.
Yes.
Baptized
and,
by fire.
And I'd asked my mom, I was like, don't tell anyone, because I'm like, it's going to be embarrassing if I don't get it, because I'm not going to. I'm like, there's a lot of, you know, good people out there. And,
Yeah,
then I got it. And
wow.
And then 2 weeks later, I'm 21 at this time. And so I get to the White House, I turn 22. So I'm 22 years old, like working in the executive office of like the president. And I'm like, how did I go from being at Missouri Western, like at a business major, and now I'm like in the White House? And here's the whole funny part of this. I actually applied for an internship during that same, at the White House, during that same fall, I guess, you know, quarter. I actually got denied because I was not qualified. I was below average.
Well.
And I had and then I was the one that was like leading the interns. I was way younger than the interns I had. But when I looked at my profile, because I could, at that point, I could look up.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, they said I was below average.
Wow.
Yeah. And I kind of just like joked about it. I was like, these people, like,
it's a good reminder that sometimes God does things.
Yeah. Just because man thinks that you're below average, God actually says, might think that you're a little bit better.
Yeah.
And so I got to do that. And then of course, you know, the election was stolen and then we were like promptly kicked out. And I got this job with Marjorie Taylor Greene, who at that time, like, you know, Trump, they were kind of like, Trump was a little bit exiting out, and then they needed to find like a new person to kind of the media to attack. And that was her.
Mm.
And so that was just, I think, really thought provoking because I saw her do so many interviews and she is so quick. I've never seen someone be able to like think on their feet so fast in my entire life. And I used to think watching her, I'm like, oh, maybe she could have done that a little better. But until I got in that position, I was like, she has a talent that I definitely don't. Yeah. But it was really during that time, I was like, okay, I don't want to be in politics because like of who I'm working for or, you know, what I'm doing. I want to make a difference.
Yeah.
And the thing is like MTG is MTG without her staff or with like, she can do it all on her own because she's that talented. And I really just want to be like adding to the movement and making sure that we're having conservative politics and wherever. And so ended up coming back home because a commissioner called and was like, hey, it's open. Like, you should run. We have nobody else that wants to run. And I looked at the legislature, which, I mean, I had no idea what was going on in Missouri. I could tell you everything in D.C., but Missouri, I mean, it was pathetic. We didn't get men out of women's sports. We haven't passed the SAFE Act like a lot of states had done. It really looked like our legislature was made up of more Democrats than Republicans. And was almost even more swampier. And I used to tease, I thought Missouri was like worse off than DC. And then getting there, I was definitely correct.
Yeah.
And so I announced I'm running for office. Then they redistrict everything.
Yeah,
completely changed the entire district.
Because you ran it against an incumbent.
Yeah, I had to run against an incumbent. Mm-hmm. So at first it was like nobody, right? They took my home county, gave it to somebody else. And then the other district was like a Z. I mean, it was very thoughtful the way they did it because it helped the guy that took DeKalb County and then it helped the guy that took the rest of District 2. And so somebody was like, maybe you should just wait, like just wait your turn and then go. And I'm like, you know what? No, like I didn't raise this money. I didn't come all the way back home just to like wait it out. Like I'm going to do this. And if I lose, I lose. And I'm just going to keep going with my life.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was probably the craziest year and a half. I mean, running against an incumbent, especially when my Speaker of the House did not like me, spent $100,000 against me.
Mm-hmm.
For average, $15,000 is a lot. But that campaign was probably the hardest thing I ever did. And the only thing that got me through was like God's grace and just reading the Bible every day and like truly like trying to figure out why God was having me run. And that was kind of my biggest question. I'm like, why are you having me do this?
Yeah.
This is so miserable.
Wow.
And it was, I mean, door knocking on someone's door and having them like rip the paper in your face, throw it back, you know?
Wow.
So you
met all the obstacles. That's part of that whole process.
Every obstacle, you know, I think even for like just a normal person running. Most people don't, like, good people don't want to run for office. And honestly, I don't really blame them.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of money. It's honestly, if you go hardcore, you get a lot more flack than what, you know, mm-hmm. normal people do. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So you won your election. Mm-hmm. You're in the state legislature. You're seeing the underbelly of how that all works.
Yeah.
Since that point, tell me a little bit about some of the legislation you've been able to be a part of that mm-hmm. you feel has been like really impactful for us, for our state.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, so we're in the SAFE Act, and like little did I know how much people don't like those bills. Like Republicans asked to like not have those bills. I had no idea. And we had like Republicans working against us to even pass the bill. And the thing is like we had like a no exceptions, like no sunset clause on it. And the only way the Senate would even pass it is if we put a sunset clause of like 4 years.
Oh, wow.
And the thing that we had in there,
We don't want to protect children from mutilating surgeries for more than 4 years, right?
No. And the craziest part that didn't get caught, and there was only like very few of us actually knew, the Democrats didn't catch it, but there was a clause in there that basically, even after the sunset clause, if something were to happen to a child, like, you know, you prescribe them testosterone, estrogen, they have the ability to sue you. And nobody knew that.
Oh, wow.
And so that was kind of a secret that we had to keep.
Yeah.
Because only like four of us figured it out. It was a senator, Andrew Koenig. He had kind of figured it out and we kind of read it and we couldn't tell anyone.
Yeah.
Because it would have ruined the entire
bill.
Yeah. And so we're coming up almost on 3 years of the really? Sunset clause. I mean, it's already been, we're close because we basically have to get it done by next year.
Yeah.
And so.
So I think this is important because, I think I've even talked to people. There are probably many people in mm-hmm. Missouri.
Yeah.
Even people outside of Missouri. I'm from California originally. And, mm-hmm. and you know, they'll say things like, oh, you know, such a conservative state, such a red state.
Yeah.
And I think there's sometimes this assumption like, oh, it's just everything's going to be okay. And they don't realize like the militancy mm-hmm. of the left in this state,
yeah.
which I have personally experienced. Fair. And yeah. you have seen. And even the compromise of so many conservatives or Republicans mm-hmm. that are willing to take issues like that deal with human life and abortion mm-hmm. and human sexuality mm-hmm. and even you know foreign ownership of our land and all these
all
sorts of things
yeah.
all together, I don't think people are recognize mm-hmm. how quickly something could change here.
Right. Well, they didn't even know this was going on. So this was going on in Missouri, down in St. Louis, at the children's hospital there. They were removing young girls' breasts.
Wow.
And so that was something. So we had the bill right in January. It was like a 12-hour hearing. We were there from like 6 to like 3 in the morning. And this wasn't going on. You had the WashU doctors come up and say, this isn't going on. We're not doing this to children, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, then a whistleblower comes out and she wrecks their entire story. I mean, she is not a Republican. She was, you know, she views herself as a liberal, you know, in all of that movement.
The truth doesn't take a side.
No.
It just
and
is.
She was just like, I just can't live with myself anymore. She's like, wow. I'm having to document every time, you know, we put these kids on these drugs and then they're coming back, they're removing their breasts and they're calling us saying, what can you do? And the doctor says, we can't do anything.
Wow.
That's the side of the story that they don't tell you mm-hmm. is that we get all these kids addicted to all these drugs. We take their breasts, all this stuff, and there's no way to reverse it. Mm. Any good doctor that knows about hormones knows like how vital it is because once you put anyone on hormones, like if you go on more estrogen, even when you're older, you have to do it so delicately because there's no formula of fixing it once you go overboard. Yeah. And the fact is that like medical doctors, they were doing this in Missouri.
Oh.
I mean, it was sickening. And that's what changed it all. Mm-hmm. It was almost like God was like, okay, like I'm so like offended with my children being hurt. And he makes this woman come out like that had such a powerful testimony, and she like was just amazing and just kept pushing through. She even came back this last session to try to remove the sunset clause and actually came. Her name is Jamie, and I mean her testimony was incredible.
We're facing this Amendment 3.
Yeah.
And probably when most people watch, some people might see this after it's, mm-hmm. you know, after we know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But some of the polling suggests that that Missourians aren't quite getting the impact that this could have on abortion rights in our state. What do you see from an internal perspective of like, if this passes, what are the implications? What can be done to still try to ensure, like, right now we don't have any abortion clinics in Missouri. And it's a very pro-life state, at least from a legal perspective. What's potentially at risk?
I mean, there's a few things. One, of course, the way that it's written, it would reverse the SAFE Act. So it would take away anything that we have, any legal recourse for any minor that goes through that, that's going to be gone. The second issue is the adverse action. And so the way that they word it is like in paragraph five, and this is the biggest one, just because we've seen what Planned Parenthood has done in Missouri personally, that if an abortionist would do something that would harm a woman while she's getting an abortion, there's no legal recourse. And I haven't seen any lawyers, liberal, be able to defend that that's not true. That's always my first thing is I'm like, what about the adverse action? And they'll try to kind of wing around about when we, after Roe v. Wade, we had made it to where, of course, like abortions couldn't happen. And if you did it, you got legal recourse, of course, like actual real abortions. And it's kind of sickening to me. In 2018, 2019, Planned Parenthood in Columbia, Missouri was using moldy machines on women. And they actually had to be shut down.
Wow.
It was a huge deal. Nobody ever talks about that. You can see a lot of news articles if you put it in. But nobody talks about that. It's not the forefront. It was during, I think, it was about the tenure of like Josh Hawley, Eric Schmidt being the AG. And then, of course, you see just last year, well, this year, last year, Planned Parenthood in Independence, Missouri was saying yes to an older man, that 13-year-old that's pregnant, we can take her to Kansas so she can get an abortion. Didn't ask about her dad, didn't ask about her parents, didn't ask.
I've seen some of the undercover footage of that.
That's, and a lot of people say that's fake, that's not true. But the reality is like, what is the easiest way to get rid of evidence of rape or anything like that? Is to have an abortion. And so Planned Parenthood has continually had a super dark past in our state. I mean, just the evidence is right there. And so they would just be right back up to where they started. I mean, we defunded them. We finally made sure that our state tax dollars weren't going to them. It was like over $1 million we were giving them every year. So that removes all of that. And the whole main course is things that are put in our Constitution can't be changed. You have to go back through the process, which is very tedious. It requires millions and millions of dollars. And the question is like, is our Constitution supposed to be ever-changing year by year by year? And the answer is no. Like, the U.S. Constitution's only been changed a handful of times, and that's our federal constitution, because that's what's supposed to balance and govern our state. But now, like, outside interest groups are like, we're down with the legislature. It's slow. They don't pass a lot of things anyway. But, like, now we're just going to funnel in millions and millions of dollars.
Make it happen.
We're going to confuse people. And, I mean, that's really what's at stake, is because we never pass initiative petition. And to make it to where it's at least a little more fair, I would say, for the entire state, because now we just have St. Louis, Columbia, and Kansas City getting to decide what happens to all of our state.
So that brings up, I think, shifting gears to a more spiritual application of this. How essential is the role of pastors, churches, Christians, really maximizing this moment to say, you know, we have a part to play in like who represents us and who we send and the laws that we approve of. There's just been a lot of silence in the pews and in the pulpits, coming from where you're working and the people you're working with and the processes you're seeing. How essential is it now for pastors to find courage and churches to find a voice in this?
I just want to say, the left always brings out their most liberal pastors every time we do any of these topics. I mean, they'll have a whole lineup. They'll have the rabbi. They'll have the Catholic priest. They'll have just some like weirdo, you know, pastor from a different church going up and being like, God says this is fine. The issue is like, if they're doing it, like, why aren't we doing it and trying to counteract their voice? And they do it all the time. And I think it's going to come to a point to where I think a lot of Christians, and I've noticed this, my family was kind of that way. It was just kind of like, leave us alone. We just don't want to, like, you know, don't bother us. But the reality is that mindset has really got us to this point. They're never going to leave us alone. So
we tend to think the best, like, oh, it's everyone's gonna do the right thing.
Don't talk about politics. Yeah. Like, this is a church. Like, but the reality is like, these issues are moral topics. Like, yeah. They hate Christians. Just look on anyone that like posts a Bible verse and just look at the comments. Oh, yeah. Like, there is a deep spiritual hatred. And it takes a lot of courage to say and go against those things. Mm. And the reality is, that's what God calls us to do. Yeah. You know, you talk about like the whole, the armor that he gives us, yes. right? I always mm-hmm. tease that, like, of course, like he gives us arms, he gives us legs, he gives us a voice, and he gives us wisdom, but he also wants us to use it.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be a pastor to have courage. Mm. I always try to tell my constituents, like, you don't even need to be an elected official to have courage. Yeah. When you're in your workplace and someone says something that's ridiculous, you can counteract that in a really sweet and nice way.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, like, I don't know how many times I've spoken up in a huge group of people and been like, this isn't right.
Yeah.
And then somebody afterwards like, thank you so much for saying that.
I wanted to say that.
Like, I really wanted to say that, but I'm really glad you did.
Yeah.
Well, how better would life just be, just in general, just moving the pendulum, if more people were like, hey, this isn't right.
Yeah.
Because it gives people courage. A lot of people just don't want to speak out.
Yeah.
Because they're nervous, it's frightening. I mean, confrontation's not great. Mm-hmm. I don't love confrontation, but if I have to do it, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah.
But that scares a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I think God does give us like a lot of courage to just have those opportunities to just start speaking out.
Yeah.
And it can be little things. And just knowing what you believe, even with Amendment 3, mm-hmm. there's so much misinformation.
Yeah.
When you even hear like one of your friends say something, it's like, well, that's not true. This is what it is. And they can take that if they want to put it in their brain, mm-hmm. or they're just going to totally, you know, take it away. And so I think it can be a whole movement, even just with one person.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people will imply that, you know, to be in politics, are you tested? Like your ethics or your integrity, mm-hmm. how does your personal faith, like in Christ, mm-hmm. really give you the strength to be where you're at and to mm-hmm. do what you do with integrity? Yeah. And how has Jesus been the motivating factor in your life for mm-hmm. just being involved where you're at?
That's a great question. My relationship with Jesus is I want to honor him with everything I do. Yeah. And I want to show and be an example. And so I feel like, you know, my life up to this point has just helped me to realize, okay, people are watching me regardless if I want them to or not. And I really don't want to do something that's going to hinder the kingdom. And I've messed up. Like, I've, you know, said stupid words and, you know, like, I've done it all. And it's like, maybe I shouldn't have said that. I mean, I'm not going to apologize for it because I believed it. But it's like, maybe I should have said it in a nicer way. But I try to keep a lot of boundaries on the legislature. You know, I'm married now to a really awesome guy.
Yeah.
And I've always just kind of had more boundaries, even more now, like how I go out, I don't drink, you know, I'm not trying to hang out past a certain time. Like I always kind of tease at 8:30, like I go home, like I'm not trying to go to all these meetings and everything. And I think sometimes, by the way, I live my life down there, people notice. A lot of people thought I was Mormon, funny enough, because I didn't drink.
Yeah,
because Mormons don't drink. It's like, no, I just, you know, I'm representing like a great group of people and I don't, you know, I don't want to mess it up.
Yeah.
And when I'm voting for bills, I'm thinking, you know, we had a really tough bill last year that was not that great. A lot of people voted for it and it was really tense. Mm-hmm. And I got told my life was ruined if I voted against it, yada, yada. Wow. But the reality of it was, I was like, I like live to please God.
Yeah.
And I don't really care if you agree or disagree with me, because if I'm honoring God, like then I'm okay. Cause that's like, it. I'm all about, you're either eating well or sleeping well. I don't care to eat well. I care to sleep well at night when I have to go back home and try to explain to my family, like what's going on. And if I didn't have God, and I think, sadly, a lot of people in the legislature don't, because their actions show a different, you know, verbiage. Mm-hmm. It would be a different place, because people would treat each other differently.
Yeah.
They would care more about the kingdom of the bills that they're doing, not harming their constituents.
Yeah. Well, you are, I think, an inspiration to many. To see you holding the line, I'm sure there are a lot of people your age that are in this world feeling the pressure of, like, how do I follow Christ and in a world that's compromised, and you are standing firm as an example of that. And we appreciate that so much. And, what, any final words to maybe anyone who gets to see this prior to the November 5th election, anything you would encourage the voters that get a chance to watch this?
I would say never underestimate. Yeah, it's a good word. Underestimate yourself. I think a lot of people like don't view themselves as valuable in any type of movement. Mm. And if we start viewing ourselves as having a little bit of more than courage and just being able to not hinder, but go out and help our friends and family and be a voice for the conservative movement and just for Christianity in general.
Yeah.
I mean, life would be a lot different.
Yeah. And you never know what the power of one person.
Yeah. Got to do hard things.
Yeah.
I mean, I love David Goggins. I guess I wouldn't say he's a Christian mentor by any means, but I think there's a lot of proof of just learning to do hard things.
Absolutely.
And doing it for Jesus. Yeah. So.
Well, we appreciate you doing that for us here in Missouri, and we're glad to support you, and thanks again for being here today.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well, hey, everybody. Thank you again for joining me on this episode. It means a lot that you take the time to engage in these conversations with us, and if you enjoyed this or you benefited from it, I would just encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, our podcast channel, or just share the link with a friend. Together, we can continue to get the Word of God out into our culture and bring clarity in the midst of chaos. And all the confusion going on around us. So God bless you guys. Until next time. See you then.